It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
South Sudanese rebels deny they're responsible for selective mass murder in Bentiu. Another Somali lawmaker gunned down in Mogadishu. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. South Sudanese rebels have denied accusations they killed hundreds after taking control of Bentiu, capital Unity State, last week. A rebel spokesman blamed others, including government forces. The UN mission in South Sudan said rebels killed hundreds and wounded hundreds more at a local mosque where people had tried to escape the fighting. Joseph Contreras is a UN spokesman.
The UN mission in South Sudan strongly condemns the killing of civilians in Bentiu, Unity State, last week. Those killings were done on the basis of ethnic affiliation and nationalities. The UN mission in South Sudan also strongly condemns the use of Bentiu 99 FM radio station to broadcast hate messages directed at certain ethnic groups.
Jen Psaki, a U.S. spokesperson in Washington, also condemned the killings and was asked about possible sanctions.
Those responsible for these atrocities must be held accountable. We're also alarmed by reports of radio Bentiu FM being used to broadcast hate speech. In terms of specific sanctions action, as you know, the president signed just about 2 weeks ago an executive order providing us with the tools. No individuals or entities have been sanctioned under this new authority yet. Well, as you know, we don't predict or comment on future action, but we continue to have the tools available should we choose to take those steps.
Barnaba Benjamin, South Sudan's foreign minister, was asked how the fighting in Unity State has affected the country's oil production.
The oil fields in Unity State, which produces about 40,000 barrels a day, those oil were even shut down just before the fight broke out in Unity State. That is the only part of the oil affected. But the rest of the oil fields, of course, the production is not what it used to be, but it is producing adequate oil when the oil production resumed just before the trouble started again.
South Sudan racked by fighting since mid-December when the government accused former Vice President Riek Machar of leading a coup attempt. The UN Children's Fund UNICEF warns nearly 250,000 children in South Sudan face acute malnutrition unless more is done to help them, Lisa Schlein reports.
UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouliérok tells VOA more than 3.7 million people in South Sudan are at high risk of not getting enough to eat. Among them, he says, are 740,000 children under age 5.
This means that if nothing is done to scale up, you know, the action against malnutrition, that means that 50,000 children under 5 could die unless they benefit from treatment.
UNICEF staff report many people are resorting to eating wild foods such as bulbs and grasses. They warn the continuing conflict between the government and rebels is forcing more people to flee their homes. If the violence persists, it notes farmers might miss the planting season, which would increase child malnutrition to heights never seen before. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Somali militants claim responsibility for killing a second member of parliament in as many days. Al-Shabaab said it shot Abdiaziz Isak Mursal, who died Tuesday after an ambush in Mogadishu. Monday, the Al-Qaeda-linked group took credit for a car bombing that killed parliamentarian Isak Mohamed Ibrahim and wounded another lawmaker. The UN Special Representative for Somalia, Ambassador Nicholas Kay, said the attacks remind us that while the Islamist group has lost territory, it remains a threat in the country.
A reminder from them that they're still capable, they're still there. A reminder from them that they are determined to undermine the government, create the impression that the government hasn't got control. And I think this will continue.
African Union and Somali troops have driven al-Shabaab out of most major cities and towns, but the militants continue to carry out such attacks. One of Mali's jihadist movements, the Movement for Oneness and Jihad in West Africa, Tuesday said a French hostage kidnapped November 2012 is dead. Mujao, a splinter of the Al-Qaeda regional branch, says Gilberto Rodriguez Leal is, quote, dead because France is our enemy. French President Francois Hollande vowed to find the truth and not allow those to go unpunished. The French national abducted as he drove a camper van through Malian territory, then controlled by the group before a French intervention force arrived 2 months later, January 2013. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. More can be found on the internet at voanews.com.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, the 23rd day of April, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade is expected to return home today from abroad, but his party said there is a problem.
The government has decided to close Dakar Airport tomorrow afternoon between 2 to 8 o'clock p.m. It does mean that President Wade is forbidden to be in Dakar tomorrow.
Amadou Sall is former Justice Minister and Communications Director during former President Abdoulaye Wade's administration. The Senegalese government says it will not tolerate the former president returning as a troublemaker. A new study links mental health and malnutrition in the Central African Republic. And Africa takes a hard look at problems in its education system.
What we see is tremendous progress at getting children in school, even getting children to complete primary school. But what we don't see is a lot of learning taking place in the classroom.
Dion Fillmore is lead economist at the World Bank. Swaziland's opposition calls on the international community to exert pressure on the government to embrace democratic reforms. And this week is Africa Vaccination Week. Those stories plus Mark Oldman, sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade is expected to return home today, Wednesday, from France, where he has been living after he was defeated in the 2012 election by current President Macky Sall. But his Senegalese Democratic Party says the government has ordered a shutdown of the international airport in Dakar and barred Mr. Wade's supporters from holding a rally at the airport to welcome him. Amadou Sall, former Justice Minister and Communications Director during Mr. Wade's administration, tells me the government is afraid because former President Wade is more popular than current President Macky Sall.
President Wade is supposed to be back at home Wednesday in the afternoon, and our party and the Senegalese citizens are ready to be there with him. But we have a problem because the government has decided to close Dakar Airport tomorrow afternoon between 2 to 8 o'clock p.m. It does mean that President Wade is forbidden to be in Dakar tomorrow. It's the first thing. The second thing, we decided when President Wade arrived to organize a meeting, a popular meeting in Dakar. The government has not authorized this meeting, and they decided that parking is forbidden in all avenues until the Dakar airport, because President Wade is very popular and population decided to be in the street and are waiting for him.
Did you request to have a rally at the airport?
No, we don't need a request. You know, if someone is coming, his supporters have the right to go to airport just to say hello and welcome. And we have to do that, welcome Abdoulaye Wade. They cannot forbid that because they have the right to do that.
Why did the government say that you should not hold your rally?
Yeah, because they fear Abdoulaye Wade, because President Macky Sall is very unpopular. His government is very unpopular. The prime minister is very unpopular. And the Senegalese citizens are unsatisfied. It is why they fear a lot that President Wade will be acclaimed by a popular rally in the street.
What does the president make of the allegations of corruption against his son?
There is no tie between his coming back and his son. President Wade has to go back home. And who come back home. He's coming back at home, and he has the right to come back home.
The president has given an interview to the French newspaper Le Monde, and he has said that the government decision to go after his son is a witch hunt, and it's being done so that his son cannot run for president in 2017.
The next president's election is in 3 years, and President Wade has said that he will not be interested for a rally. But now, you know, he is a fighter for human rights. He was a fighter for democracy. And he runs for democracy during 26 years in opposition. And President Wade said that now, at this time, with the new president, there is no transparency. There is no justice. The principal leaders of our opposition and our party are not authorized to leave the country. And we have 10 persons from us who now are in jail without evidence.
Amadou Sall is former Justice Minister and Communications Director during former President Abdoulaye Wade's administration. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dakar. Abu Abel Cham, spokesman for President Macky Sall, denies the government has shut down the airport. However, Cham tells me the government will not tolerate Mr. Watt returning home as a former president and as a troublemaker.
We did not close the airport. The airport is free. All civil planes come in Leopold Sedar Senghor Airport.
So where do you think Mr. Amadou Sall is getting the information that the airport is closed?
I don't know. You have to ask for him. I have to say that our airport is open today and tomorrow, like all days.
He's saying also that the government has refused for former President Abdullah Wade's supporters to come to the airport to rally. Would you allow that?
The former president, Mr. Abdullah Wade, has a statue of former president. Tomorrow, if he come in this case with his statue, we will open the airport, give him a guard, give him a car to leave him to go where he wants. But what we don't accept is that to come with his statue of former president and to want to make troubles in the city. We have a state here. We are responsible. But we have what were our civil rights? What was the civil rights of former president or also all Senegalese citizens?
Well, you said that your government does not want the former president to come into Senegal and make trouble. His people are saying they just want to go to the airport and welcome him and say hello. So what's wrong with that?
No, in that case, they are free to go to the airport to say welcome to their leader, Mr. Abdoulaye Wade. It's our former president. We have to give him respect. But just what we say, that it's not the occasion to make troubles in the city.
So what do you mean that you don't want him to make trouble? What does that mean?
He says that he comes here for political aim. That's what he has said yesterday in the newspapers. We say that, okay, if you come to make meeting with your political friends, you have to demand the organization.
The former president is coming home at a time that your government has gone after his son, Karim Wade, for alleged corruption. The former president has said that going after his son is an example of witch hunt.
What is true is his son, Mr. Karim Wade, was a former minister in his father's government. He has big responsibilities in the government of his son. A judge has charged him to explain where he has getting the big money that is found in his bankery account. That is the truth. It's simple.
Abu Abel Cham is spokesman for Senegalese President Macky Sall. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dakar. Banned opposition groups in Swaziland are calling on the international community to withdraw support from King Mswati III's government to pressure the administration to embrace their demands for democratic reforms. Mario Mansuko, leader of the People's United Democratic Movement, known as PUDEMO, tells reporter Peter Clotty that opposition groups seek solidarity from the international community to support their struggle for their rights of speech and assembly in a new democratic dispensation.
The democratization and the liberation of Swaziland must be an act of the people of Swaziland. However, Swaziland cannot be an island of dictatorship in a sea of democracies. It is part of the global community. And we therefore, in that regard, can only ask for international solidarity in the form, for example, the Commonwealth, in the Harare Declaration, Swaziland does not fit in there now. And we are saying all those are fundamentally centered within the respect of fundamental human rights. And that is where the international community is going to assist us. Otherwise, the battle will be fought inside Swaziland.
Well, the government has dismissed criticism from the opposition groups that the government is using the court system to intimidate and harass opponents of the administration. But the government argues that that is not true, especially when people are held in contempt of court for not obeying court orders.
Any dictatorial government will respond in that fashion. The two people who are charged with contempt of court are actually being muzzled. The ruling by the courts was made publicly, and the editor and the attorney, who is under the Lawyers for Human Rights, were really expressing their views about the judgment. And I believe that that is really their fundamental right to express themselves. Now, in terms of the courts here, there is what we call the Judicial Service Commission, which is appointed by His Majesty the King. The judges are appointed by that body, and obviously they will make judgments that are in favor of the regime.
You're calling on international pressure to be put on Swaziland to embrace more democratic reforms by the Western countries. What do you mean by that, especially when people are participating in what the government calls Swaziland's main democratic right, when they recently voted for their own members of parliament or members of the National Assembly?
Thanks for that question, my brother. I think people must view this outside the box and from a broader perspective. People must understand that the government that is in place right now is not accountable to the people. This government is accountable to His Majesty the King. We are saying this is not democracy. We must go down to the roots and have a government of the people. There is only one democracy. That is the government of the people by the people.
Mario Masuku is leader of Swaziland's banned opposition People's United Democratic Movement, known as PUDEMO. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Mbabane. It's Wednesday morning, the 23rd day of April, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Data collected at a hospital in the Central African Republic suggests that many parents of malnourished children have symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, according to the international aid group Action Against Hunger. As Nick Long reports from Bangui, the group offers these parents psychosocial counseling in order to help the children recover.
Action Against Hunger treated 4,664 children with severe acute malnutrition in Bangui between last October and March. The NGO has data from interviews with about 1,000 of these children's parents. The NGO says the data show that three-quarters of these parents were exposed to traumatic experiences and 60% described having symptoms suggestive of post-traumatic stress disorder, although they might not develop the condition. It is known that young children whose parents have been exposed to severe trauma are at higher risk of developing malnutrition, but the high proportion of parents falling into that category in this case may come as a surprise to experts. This kind of data has hardly ever been collected before in conflict zones, such as Bangui has been in recent months, so the links between violent trauma and malnutrition are not well documented. Stephanie Duverger, a psychologist who has studied the data, says that horrific experiences, fear and anguish often reduce parents' capacity to care for their children. She told VOA about one father with a very young child whose wife had abandoned him and whose neighbourhood was attacked by rebels.
So he had to escape, and on escaping and hiding in the jungle, he saw a lot of dead bodies, the child also, and since then he said the child started losing completely appetite, and himself he became quite aggressive, and he presented nearly all the post-stress disorder symptoms.
The data collected from interviews also shows that 68% of the malnourished children had been refusing food. Action Against Hunger is not suggesting that extreme poverty and lack of food are not the critical factors leading to malnutrition. But it is saying that young children often need emotional support as well as food in order to eat properly, and trauma can make it harder for parents to give that support. Duverger says many parents the NGO counselled in Bangui had reacted roughly when their children had eating difficulties, and this may have made things worse.
Also, the study showed that a lot of parents do not understand the symptoms as being a somatic way to express distress. They tend to think it's a whim of a child, and they correct them quite violently.
Several parents VOA spoke to at the hospital said they hadn't understood why their children were not eating. One mother had brought a six-year-old boy to the centre, and Duverger says this boy initially screamed at any adult that approached him, including his mother. The mother tells VOA she gave the child food, but he refused to eat, and sometimes he threw fits, which she thought were just tantrums, so she started forcing him to eat. But she says at the hospital she has learned that his fits were symptoms of stress as a result of what they had undergone after they had fled to the bush to escape violence. Duverger commented that it's hard for many people to understand the importance of counselling in a conflict zone like the Central African Republic. But other NGOs working here, including Save the Children and the medical NGO Emergency, told VOA they now want to include psychosocial counselling in their activities as they can see the need. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
The World Bank says Africa has experienced one of its best decades of growth since the 1960s, but some Africans say economic progress has not translated into faster job creation, especially for the youth. As 11 million people enter the job market every year, experts say meeting the challenge of youth employment in Africa is multifaceted, and there is no one tool that will solve the problem. Mariama Diallo looks at education in Africa, one area that development experts say needs to be re-evaluated and ways to improve it.
The World Bank says that more than 70% of African children complete primary school, up from about 50% in 1990. But the quality of that education is in question. A recent World Bank report notes that lack of a solid foundation in reading and mathematics makes it harder for young workers to get more productive jobs. Dion Silmer is co-author of the report.
For a group of Southern and Eastern African countries, this regionally benchmarked exercise identified that 60% of sixth graders, after 6 years of schooling, could not reach the level of what they define as beginning numeracy. That means that these kids can recognize numbers, but they really don't know what to do with them.
The report also shows that in a number of countries, including Uganda and Mali, more than 70% of students in grade 2 and 3 could not read a single word of a simple paragraph.
What we see is tremendous progress at getting children in school, even getting children to complete primary school. But what we don't see is a lot of learning taking place in the classroom.
Development experts say improving education will help Africa's youth be more competitive at home and in the global market. But for educated workers to get jobs, Africa's leaders must create a better business environment with access to land, capital, infrastructure, and technology. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This week is Africa Vaccination Week, an effort by the World Health Organization to mobilize governments and communities to bring attention to the importance of immunizing against preventable diseases. As the anti-vaccine movement in the United States continues to question the safety of some vaccines, Dr. Richard Mahigo, Program Area Coordinator of Routine Immunization and New Vaccines at the WHO Region Office for Africa, tells Ricky Stryak that the vast majority of communities in Africa are very much in favor of vaccination efforts to prevent diseases such as polio and measles.
The African Vaccination Week is aiming at actually increasing the awareness of the community on the value and the importance of immunization in protecting the vaccine-preventable diseases.
What are some of the more specific challenges facing sub-Saharan Africa when it comes to vaccinations?
The diseases which are actually can be prevented with vaccination in the region. We can cite measles. We have diseases related to polio. We still have issues related to meningococcal meningitis. Yellow fever is an issue in many countries. Tuberculosis, whooping cough, diphtheria.
I thought I had recently read as well that there were some issues in northern Nigeria when it came to the polio vaccine. There was some community resistance, I believe, to the administration of polio vaccines. Is that correct?
Not exactly like that. It's true that Nigeria is still a polio endemic country, actually the only one remaining in the African region. But the progress which the country has made towards polio eradication is really tremendous. As we speak today, the country has reported only one case of polio in 2014. But in the past, there were some issues, of course, in the northern part of Nigeria in terms of the adherence to the vaccination. But I think those with the support of WHO and other partners, I think those resistance were overcome. And now the government is very fully engaged. The religious leaders, local traditional leaders, are really working together to facilitate the community.
Dr. Richard Mahigo is Program Area Coordinator of Routine Immunization and New Vaccines at the World Health Organization's Regional Office for Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Congo Brazzaville. Minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Morocco's preparations to stage the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations is on track, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, revealed in Rabat. This follows a week-long inspection tour led by CAF's second vice president, Alamami Kamara, to scheduled host cities of Agadir, Marrakech, Tangier, and Rabat. Morocco's Youth and Sports Ministry Secretary General Karim Akwari says higher education and national education ministries have been roped in to enhance the success of staging the nation's cup. On a sad note, Zambia's Denis Liwewe, one of Africa's most outstanding football commentators, passed away following an illness in Lusaka, Zambia on Tuesday. For over three decades from the 1960s, Liwewe stood out for his lively, colorful, intelligent and entertaining contribution to the growth of passion in football, not just in Zambia, but in Africa, the Zambia president Michael Sata told the local media in his message of condolence. Staying in Lusaka, Football Association of Zambia President Kalusha Bwalya earlier on led KK 11 Legends to a 5-2 victory over Zambian class of 1994, who played in the Orange Africa Cup of Nations final. The exhibition match was a tribute to former Zambian head of state Kenneth Kaunda on occasion of his 90th birthday. Bwalya says President Kaunda made a solid contribution in laying the foundation for a strong national team. Turning to volleyball, defending champions Kenya Prisons play Tunisia's Sfax in quarterfinal action at the Africa Women's Club Volleyball Championships in the Tunisian capital Tunis today, Wednesday. Algeria's GS Petroliers engage Egypt's Sham. Cameroon's Ingies and FAP encounter Kenya Pipeline and Tunisia's Carthage, respectively. In classification ties, Uganda's Nkumba University plays Rwanda's Military APR. Algeria's Schlef and Bejaia play Ethiopia's Water Sport and Uganda's Ndeje University, respectively, as Cameroon's Bafia face Gabon's Manga Sport. Finally, in disability sport, the South Africa Sports Confederation and Olympic Committee, SASCOC, congratulates Ernest van Dijk for winning an unprecedented 10th wheelchair race at the 118th edition of the Boston Marathon in Massachusetts State, United States of America, on Monday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Our listener mail for this Wednesday morning comes from Mohammed Ahmed Masuo of Monrovia, Liberia. He writes, Dear VOA, kidnappings in Nigeria will remain a popular option as long as their perpetrators are not apprehended and prosecuted. The Nigerian government should do more to protect the lives of its citizens. At the same time, I think there is a need for a political settlement to the problem of Boko Haram in Nigeria. We thank you, Mohammed Ahmed Masuo of Monrovia, Liberia, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. That's it for this Wednesday, April 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Jackson Vunganyi, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shrack, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everybody in Africa a very lovely, lovely Wednesday.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers. Cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent
to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.